Dallas, Fort Worth. I've had some friends in that area, and I remember it being severe weather central. And I know your story is not necessarily about a storm coming through, but just out of curiosity, is that living in that area for the last 24 years, has disaster preparedness been on your radar at all?
Oh, yes. I mean, I've witnessed actually a small, I wouldn't even say it was an F1, but clipped across the back of my property one year and went over to my neighbor's yard, picked up their motorhome, dipped it in the pool, and dropped it on the other side. I've had two trampolines take off like Frisbees and get caught in the power lines.
Hey everybody, I'm Evan Farmer, and welcome to Disaster Diaries. I'm here with my co-host, Andy, and we're here to interview people who have literally lost everything and survived to tell us how they rebuilt.
I'm Andy, and we're diving into the human side of disaster recovery, the grief, the grit, and the guts it takes to start over.
All right, so thanks for tuning in, and without further ado, let's jump into today's episode. Hey, if you shop at Home Depot, this is a no-brainer. Our free Build SOS program unlocks verified discounts, often up to 30%, plus access to exclusive deals on tools and materials. It is especially useful for contractors, handymen, and DIYers who buy regularly. No fees, no gimmicks, just better prices at checkout. All you have to do is click the link below or in the show notes that says Build SOS with Home Depot to start saving. Welcome to Disaster Diaries. I'm Evan Farmer. Today's guest wasn't a victim of a natural disaster. Instead, Ron Brown lost his home in a fire when a plumber's torch inadvertently overheated some hidden insulation at his house in Greater Dallas-Fort Worth. Here's Ron with the rest of the story.
In March of 24, I called the plumber that actually plumbed the house when I built it. Well, he'd retired from the plumbing company. He was just out. And whenever I had a plumbing problem, I'd just say, hey, Tom, I got this. Can you come fix it? On the inside of the house, there was a fireplace in that corner that was a gas fireplace. Well, unfortunately, it wasn't fire blocked properly. And there was an AC chase there. And so insulation had fallen in behind that fireplace. And there was a second story above it. And apparently he got some insulation hot in there while he was sweating that leak. My house recesses back so he couldn't see where he was working. And he popped a hose bib away from the brick. And when he did, between your brick and your stud wall, there's an air gap. It was just like dragging on a cigarette. My house just went woof. And I actually came down the cul-de-sac and pulled in the driveway, pulled in around, I got a rear entry garage, pulled in the garage, and as soon as I opened the door, I smelled smoke. And I looked up, I started seeing flames come out of the corner of the fireplace there. I started screaming for him, and I couldn't find him, and it dawned on me, I was like, well, I got to get these vehicles out of this house. You know, this house is going up. So I moved the truck, first truck, up to a neighbor's, ran back, got in the second truck, and then it dawned on me, I got three dogs in the house. So I take the second truck, just moved it next door, hop the fence, run in the house through the garage, and we had a long hallway. And as soon as I opened up that back door, the door disappeared. It was black abyss. And all I could see was about a foot above the ground, just an air pocket. So I walked down the hallway to where we kept the dogs in the utility room, and I let them out. One of them ran out the garage. The other two ran into the den. So I had to drop on my knees, crawl in there, get those two dogs. When I came out, there was a lady standing there that had one dog. And she goes, hey, can I take those two dogs? And the second story collapsed. And I was like, she goes, you're lucky you got out of that house. I said, yes, ma'am. And she goes, well, what are you going to do with these dogs? I said, can you kindly just put them in that truck over there? I said, they'll be okay. And I just literally let the tailgate down on my truck. Somebody brought me a cold beer, and I sat there and drank it. And all I could do was sit there and reminisce all the memories. But the one thing that dawned on me the most sitting there was I saw something poof out of the top of it, and it was floating away. And I was like, I recognize that. I haven't seen that in about 15 years. And it dawned on me, I was paying all this money to store stuff that I wasn't even using.
On the tailgate of your truck, drinking a beer, watching the house burn. That to me is the most rock and roll thing I think I've ever heard.
Well, my middle daughter did not agree. She walked up to me and goes, really? You're going to treat this like a bonfire? And I looked her square in the face and I go, what can I do?
I have to just chime in and say the same exact experience for me as I watched my house burn. And I was just like, well, there goes everything. And a strange calm kind of almost came over me then. And then a little bit down the road as, you know, it hit me. But I don't know if you experienced this. There was, I hesitate to say this because I'm not trying to belittle sentimentality of things. But there was a little bit of relief. I had been clinging to things and had been giving importance to things, even the sentimental, even the photos that I lost, that I don't think warranted that level of care when, and luckily you got the dogs out. For me, it was my family. But man, I was kind of relieved. I was like, well, shoot, all that's gone. I can kind of start my life now. Did you have anything similar?
That's exactly. I don't want to get into a spiritual religious thing, but it was almost like an answer to prayers, because that house was just an albatross for me. And even though I almost had it paid off, my personal life wasn't in the best, you know, a nasty divorce and everything else and arguing over that. And then, you know, and I actually got accused by a neighbor that is a petroleum engineer that I started it, that it was arson. And that was the day it was burning. And the sheriff actually told him to leave, that he, you know, he couldn't make any comments because he wasn't even on property. Well, by Friday, the fire inspector, whoever came in for the insurance company, he already determined his accidental fire started by the plumber. And my insurance was paid out by April 16th, except for my content. But, you know, and unfortunately, I was $1 million underinsured. But in a way, it was a blessing, because if I would have been insured to what they wanted, or maybe over, I would still be in litigation with the insurance company right now, and the only people who would be winning would be the lawyers.
A lot of insurance companies are looking for an arson situation or plausible excuse to call it that or make it, you know, and so they will actually, to some degree, come in and really need to rule that out. And you had a neighbor screaming some ludicrous notion, which does not help the situation.
No, it doesn't.
And did the insurance company ever try to dig into that and turn it into an arson situation? Because then they're off the hook.
I don't think the insurance, I mean, it was very obvious the way the fire started. Right. Thinking back now, the insulation I had in that house, it was a blown insulation. It was actually a fuelant for the fire. That's what caused the fire to really burn as hot as it did, was the insulation.
When you built back, did you take any of those things into consideration? Because it seems like you've got a new house now.
No, I don't. I was very blessed. I live on 2 acres, and I had a 1,500 square foot barn dominium that I had heated and cooled and had it partitioned out like a mother-in-law or pool house with a full kitchen and a bath. And then the rest of it was my shop. Well, when my house burned, whatever I was able to salvage, I put in a mule box, you know, out on my driveway, moved all my shop equipment into it. And then basically I'm living in the barn.
Yeah. Wow.
But, so then, you know, back to what you originally said, sort of to circle back, the relief. Yeah, I'm 100% debt-free at a very young age. You know, and that is, that's pretty amazing.
Dallas-Fort Worth, I've had some friends in that area, and I remember it being severe weather central. And I know your story is not necessarily about a storm coming through, but just out of curiosity, is that living in that area for the last 24 years, has disaster preparedness been on your radar at all?
You know, to prepare for a fire, I don't think you ever can. The only thing I can say that saved me was video. Annually, I would go through and video everything in the house, every closet, open every drawer. And then I would take that video and I'd email it to myself. So that way, no matter where I was at, I could always have access to it.
That's brilliant. Ron, you said something earlier that I was about to ask you, how you were underinsured in your insurance and how that was ended up being a good thing because it would have been tied up in litigation. So are you saying that the financial loss that you took, is this just you being positive or did something good actually come from being underinsured?
Well, I'm a miser anyway when it comes to expenses. I'll figure out a way to get it as low as I can. And in December, I wrestled with my homeowner's insurance and I told the agent, it came back. I think the previous year, my premiums more than doubled. All right. It was like a 65% increase. And I called him and said, hey, I don't have that in my budget. You know, I'm not doing that. And I said, well, a third of the cost of the home is the foundation, right? And he goes, yeah. I said, okay, if a tornado comes through, it's not going to suck the foundation out of the ground. If it burns, I still got the foundation. I said, whatever the value it's coming in at, knock a third off of it, and that's what I'll insure it for. So that's what I did. Okay.
Looking back, is there any, you know, advice you would give to anybody else or, you know, best practices, do this, don't do this?
The one thing that I did not like, and it caused a lot of problems, I was sitting there asking the fire department, I was like, why aren't y'all putting water on it? Well, I'm in the county, so the closest fire hydrant to me was 1,500 feet. And I live on a cul-de-sac at the back of it, and they'd already pulled in a pump truck and emptied it. Well, all the scavenger renovation companies had it blocked where they couldn't get the second pump truck in. And
scavenger renovation companies, they showed up with the fire?
Oh, they were there before the fire department was there because they want to catch you underneath stress and shock. And once you sign a contract with them, you can't get out of it.
Yeah.
And they were wearing me out. And I told them, I said, look, there'll be a meeting in this cul-de-sac at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning for all y'all. And I'm going to handle this one time and one time only. And I told them there was like 15 or 20 different companies standing there. And I said, look, guys, I GC'd this house in 2000 myself. Why do I need y'all now? If I'm going to rebuild it, I'll GC it again. I said, now get out of here.
We've been saying for years that there's only two types of people that show up and drive towards a disaster. Those are trying to help and those are trying to take advantage, right? So it seems like you have skirted the whole unethical contractor problem, right? Because you're your own GC, you're not rebuilding right now. But what are your thoughts on that? I mean, is that something that you've experienced in the past in other ways or, you know?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I have never felt that much pressure in my life, you know, to have 20 different companies hammering you and they're wanting you to sign a contract. And I just said, and even to do the demolish. And then once you sign that, you're locked into them for the rebuild. And, you know, I've heard all these horror stories and I was like, guys, I don't need y'all to do anything except get out of here.
If you were to come across somebody that lost their house literally 5 minutes ago, what would you say to them?
I'd tell them to take 3 deep breaths, say the Lord's Prayer, and tell him exactly what you want at that moment and be very specific. And then let it go.
Everything can be replaced, but not the people and the pets and the loved ones that we care about. So, I mean,
well, you know, I will say this, a catastrophe, you know, of a fire, a flood, a tornado, a hurricane, whatever, it'll put a strain on a family.
Is it, in your experience, a strain over different ways of processing loss or different ways of deciding how to move forward from that point?
From my perspective as a mature adult and me, the one that built it, I know I could do it over again. But I think from a child's perspective, where they didn't build it, but they were in it, they're sort of at a loss. They're like, well, will I ever attain that? They don't know.
When I grew up, I was on a number of acres, and there were three houses on there, different family houses, and I lived in a small house kind of in the woods. And my grandmother lived, I only had one grandparent ever, and she lived in another house that was on the other side of the property, right? So it was about 14 mm-hmm. acres at the time. And so I grew up in both houses, right? I grew up back and forth. There were dinners over there. It was just as much of my childhood in that house as in the house that I grew up in. And it burned down. She had passed away, and it had gone to her son, but it burned down when I was around 22 maybe. And I remember thinking, well, I'm never going to be able to set foot in that place anymore. And it was almost like the death of a family member, in that the house was gone because I couldn't go visit that place anymore. And when I visited that place in the past, even when I was, you know, at a young adult, like, you know, 20, I still could tap into the emotions and the memories of being there, right? Like staying over there and sleeping over when my parents, you know, went out for the night and, you know, went to go socialize, mm-hmm. or, you know, all the parties, all the memories. It was almost like I was afraid I couldn't access that in myself anymore without the visual and sensory triggers of being in that place anymore. And I remember that was the biggest part of mourning it. And I think that would be even harder if I was younger, right? Like if I was a child, because that is being taken away and you can't replace that. I mean, you could build the exact same house and that still wouldn't be that for your kids, right?
No, and you got to realize my three daughters grew up in that house. That's all they knew. You know, even though they're out on their own and most of their personal belongings and everything that had value to them, they had gotten out of the house.
Andy, when you were talking, I was thinking of that country song, The House That Built Me, I think Miranda Lambert.
Mm-hmm.
Captures it perfectly because, you know, it's a story about, you know, a girl who's going back to her childhood home and all those memories and the idea of not being able, even though we're probably never going to walk through our childhood home again, just the fact that it's gone erases something inside of you that's a different experience. And again, for me, I'm 53 and very practical by nature. I'm like, all right, let's move on. Let's move on to the next thing. I'm thinking to, you know, how we can get to the next step. But other people, children especially, they have a different experience, which is so easy to forget.
You know, I'm 59. My perspective on life is a little different. I view the only thing I can take with me is my memories. I can't take anything materialistic with me. So I'm dead set for the next 30 years until I die just to build memories. I don't want to accumulate stuff.
It's not just always about moving on and putting it behind you. Everybody else has their own pace and their own healing process.
Yeah, I mean, I lost my watch. It was in my master closet. And I knew exactly where I laid it. And when the fire department came in with that pump truck and they blew all that water, they just destroyed our master closet. It was on the front of the house, and above it was just attic and insulation. So that was the hottest part of the fire. And so that was Tuesday. I spent all day Wednesday and Thursday just scouring that closet, could not find that watch. And Friday, when the fire inspector came in, when he's finished, and I was asking him, I said, what do you think? And he was telling me, you know, yeah, a plumber started it. It's obvious, da, 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 because you'll have a report by Tuesday. And I said, by the way, I said, I lost a watch in my closet. I can't find it. So we walk in there and he goes, where was it? I goes, right here. And he had like tongs or something. And he moves it around in rubbish. In about 3 minutes, he goes, here it is. Picked it up and handed it to me.
Was the watch salvageable or was it melted?
Oh, the watch was perfect. All I did was rinse it off and put it back on. I got that from Salesman of the Year in 99. So I had some sentimental value to that one.
That's great. So I'm curious, though, the loose end I need to have wrapped up is, what was that thing that flew out of your chimney that you saw, that you recognized? I got to know. Do you remember what it was?
It was a ski jacket.
Wow. Intact enough to recognize, but riding that heat wave. Right?
Yeah. Upward. It was like a balloon. Wow. It just took off.
That's why when you see a house burn, things will just fly, and just items that shouldn't be flying. And it's kind of surreal.
Well, all right, gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. It's been my pleasure. Bye, thank you for inviting me.
Sounds good, Ron. Appreciate it.
All right, y'all have a good one.
Thanks, Ron. Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
I think what was interesting listening to Ron is that there were almost like, it was like mining, because I felt like there were pockets of memories, right? And we would tap into, like, when he had, when he said, hold on, Evan, you just reminded me of something. And there were these whole complete stories in and of themselves that were just little windows, right, into the story, whereas some of our other guests have traveled a, you know, a different narrative path. So that was fascinating.
It sounds like he's got a whole lot of life that that he lives large in every aspect. There was nothing small about his experience, and just the fact that he sat there on the tailgate and cracked a beer while the house was burning, to me, is spectacular. Like, it's just my disaster hero right there. I wish I could be that stoic, maybe without the beer, but I mean, just to sit there and immediately go to a place of, oh well, God, I'm trying to think of the inventor. I think it was Thomas Edison. Have you heard this story about Thomas Edison?
Okay.
I read about it in a book called, there's a book about stoicism, Ryan Holiday. The book will come, The Obstacle is the Way. And he tells a story about Thomas Edison and how he had this factory where all his inventions were, and he was producing all these materials and everything, and it caught fire, and it was underinsured because they had themselves convinced that the concrete building that they had, you know, they had created for this factory was, you know, didn't need, it wasn't going to burn. And what I love about the story is he tells his son, go get your mother and go get your brother. I assume there was a brother. I don't know. I'm probably butchering the story, but he's like, tell them that there will never be another opportunity to see a fire of this magnitude. He was excited because he had already been resigned to the fact that it's gone. So let's just sit here literally in this very present moment and watch this unbelievable fire.
Yeah.
And I think when you have that attitude, it allows you to kind of go forward a little bit easier and not sort of dwell in the victim or the pain of it, which, look, it's going to be there, and you're going to have to get through it. And I'm not trying to tell anybody that, you know, just skip it. I think he rebuilt and was making the equivalent of $10 million a year in today's dollars, like within a year and a half.
And, wow.
And I don't think you can do that if you're constantly, you know, sorting through the wreckage of your mind in the whole process. So maybe it's just that I'm aspirationally want to be the tailgate beer guy.
One parting thought. For a long time, in college, I was into the blues, right? Discovered like Chicago blues. And the blues were created to mire in it, right? Like if you're going through something bad, you go through it and you bring the blues to you counterintuitively. You listen to the blues when you're blue because that actually makes you feel like you're not alone and you can get through it. And I was just picturing, I had this image of somebody who has or you know, in the future goes through something like this and finding the Disaster Diaries podcast. And who knows, maybe we have 30 or 40, you know, in the can at that point, and just binge listening, right? Because it's story after story about how you're not alone and these people who have gone through it. And it can be seen as like a very heavy thing, but also it's a period of time where it's like listening to the blues, right? Like it can bring you out of it as well.
Hey, thanks for listening to Disaster Diaries. And if you're moved by these stories, please like, subscribe, leave a review. That will really help us. And also please share the show with somebody that you think needs it. To tell your own story, download the Disaster Diaries app, available at all app stores, or visit disasterdiaries.com. And if you're looking for help rebuilding, check out buildsos.com for support, tools, and resources to help you better prepare for, respond to, and recover from disasters. Hey there, just a reminder that this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not legal, financial, or insurance advice. Disaster Diaries and Build SOS do not endorse any specific products, services, methods, or guest viewpoints discussed here. So please, always consult qualified professionals for decisions related to disaster preparedness, construction, or insurance.